Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The U.S. federal government shut down last week, but the financial markets gave a collective shrug in response, with both stocks and bonds finishing up on the week. The shutdown is now entering into day six, and a resolution doesn't appear imminent. That means investors will be navigating the markets with less information than usual for the time being. So joining me here today in studio to discuss the shutdown, the economy, and the markets. Glad to welcome back from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas, Jason Dreho. Jason, good Monday morning to you. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time with our listeners and their clients. Welcome back.
It's good to be back. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. So, Jason, let's start with the government shutdown. As mentioned, as we're recording today on October 6th, the shutdown has entered day six. So what are you watching for with respect to signs of a resolution in the hours and days ahead?
Well, ultimately, to reach some sort of deal, both Republicans and Democrats have to presumably give up something or agree to something. So then the question really is, from their perspective, like, what's the political calculation in which they're willing to acquiesce on some demands that they're making, you know, to get a deal done? And that kind of boils down to, some sense, politically, do they think they're kind of winning or not? You know, like, are they going to be perceived as the winners or losers if this kind of drags on too long? Who's the public going to blame? There's multiple polls out there and showing, by and large, more voters are blaming the Republicans than Democrats, which, given that Republicans have both the House, the Senate, and of course, the White House, that's sort of understandable. Independent voters appear to be blaming Republicans 2-1. So the moment the blame is going in that direction, whether, again, how much that matters, you know, remains to be seen. But that's one kind of consideration. Now, think about what is the Democrats in particular want. It's for the subsidies or tax credits for Obamacare to be extended. And that is also kind of gaining some traction. So politically, where do they think it's kind of in their best interest to kind of hold out? That seems to be gaining some sort of traction. On the other hand, Republicans, with President Trump and one of his key advisors, Russell Vought, is, out there basically saying, like, if we don't get a deal, we're willing to cut entire departments or cut, a large percentage of the furloughed workers. And this is an administration, based on their actions this year, that you have to take them, someone at their face value. Mm-hmm. Again, whether they're willing to go through with that, because if they do, the economic consequences, the headlines might be further there kind of owning it. So this is a bit of the brinksmanship. There had been votes essentially every day in the House and Senate, and there was thought that this would happen kind of every other day. Speaker Mike Johnson for the House kind of came out and said there will be no votes this week. Of course, that could change by lunchtime today, but that's kind of where it is. So there'll probably be kind of somewhat regular votes. It's important to note that in the Senate, right, the Republicans have 53 versus 47 seats. It has to pass by 60 votes in the Senate to get through. Already three Democrats last week before the shutdown voted on a deal that would have kept the government funded. One Republican didn't, so it was 55-45. So five more Democrats would have to kind of peel away to vote with them, Republicans, to kind of get this through. How long, again, like, individually some might want to hold out. If you're in a swing state, if you're up for re-election next year, that may be a consideration where some Democrats either, like, this is working for me or not, right? That could be goes back to the political calculation. In terms of timing, like, there's nothing that would necessarily force the government to reach some sort of deal. There is more other than sort of optics. On October 15th, it's a military payday. So it's usually, sometimes there's been partial government shutdowns where the military still gets paid. In this case, they wouldn't. There could be certainly a desire among both parties to not be seen as not funding the military. Who, again, politically, that'd be viewed as more critical. That's debatable. You can kind of make cases for both. So it looks like at the moment, given where things stand, there's probably not a deal likely, today. I mean, you can never rule these things out, because suddenly there's going to be some sort of breakthrough at any point in time, at least to fund the government for like another month, 2 months, something like that. But I think the risk is that this extends at least for another week, which means another week of no data. Mm-hmm. And for the markets, that if we get past October 15th, that's when CPI data would come out. Then it starts to kind of run the risk of, like, well, the data for October also be impaired because collection periods, start to become impacted as well. So this is kind of how it's likely to play out. Ultimately, we know it's going to be resolved, and probably resolved, by early November, just based on history, if not sooner, and I think, given that, without a lot of pressure, there's no reason why we'd expect a deal to be imminent for the moment, it's not having major economic impacts. And as you mentioned at the start, the markets kind of shrugged it off for the most part last week.
So a lot of wait and see as lawmakers continue to work through this. Now, normally on this podcast, Jason, as you know, early in the month, we do spend some time discussing the payrolls report and what that says about the U.S. economy. Now, we don't, of course, have that data at this time, though based on the data we do have, how would you assess the state of the labor market and the economy at the moment?
Well, we did get various labor market data last week, which collectively would kind of reinforce the narrative that's been in the market for a little while now, which is we have a labor market that seems to be in a holding pattern. Yep. And what some would characterize as a no hire, no fire kind of situation. So on that front, JOLTS data, which is the job openings, that was released on September 30th for August. So we did get it just in time. The number of job openings went up slightly, net positive, but also the number of unemployed workers has gone up a little bit. So the ratio, that thing that's critical to get a sense of labor market balance or imbalance, is the ratio of job openings to unemployed. And that actually went down a little bit. Now it's less than one. So there's slightly fewer job openings than people looking for work. This has kind of been trending lower steadily since, 2022, when it peaked at two. This is during the Great Resignation, the massive amount of job openings, and not many people were unemployed or looking for, or at least not nearly as many people were looking for work. I think a better context is where was this measure prior to the pandemic beginning back in 2019 or early 2020, and it was running around 1.2. So definitely signs of like the labor market kind of, kind of softening overall, but nothing kind of changes the overall narrative. ADP, it's a private company that collects data, payroll data, and they have a monthly number that comes out for September. It was minus 32,000. That was the third negative month in the last four. So again, reinforcing sort of softness. It wasn't dramatically lower than other months. It certainly wasn't positive, but kind of fuels this view that job growth is just very tepid at this point in time. There was no initial jobless claims number on Thursday morning. But individual states do release data, and aggregating those up can give a pretty decent proxy for what the national number would be. And those estimates also suggest no real uptick in initial claims, a little bit higher, but all within sort of the range of noise. So consistent again with no fire, hiring is weak, a labor market that's holding steady. So that narrative hasn't changed. And again, it's only been 3 days into the, at least economic data in terms of the shutdown. Other data continues to show a relatively resilient consumer and growth estimates still tracking, for the Atlanta Fed up to almost 4% for Q3 and other economists, in the 2.5 to 3% range. So the narrative overall of an economy that softer labor market, but recession risk remains low, that still seems to be the dominant view. And we're not going to get, a ton of data, at least in the next week or so, that would alter that view.
Okay, so despite not having the full picture, there are still indicators out there which investors, analysts can point to get some sense of what the health of the labor market looks like. So it's interesting how this all translates to the markets. I mentioned, Jason, how the markets were up last week, this despite the shutdown. So what does that say about what's driving markets at this time?
Well, equities overall were up, and bonds were up a little bit. So it was kind of a positive story across the board. For equities and risk assets in general, there's a few different things that we can kind of point to. One is that there's been strong momentum for equities, and sometimes, simple kind of logic that the path of least resistance is that the markets go higher in the absence of new news or something that would change the overall narrative. That momentum kind of continues. Or in physics, an object in motion stays in motion unless it's disturbed in some capacity. So there's just the bias is if the market's going to go one direction or the other, more likely it's going to go up given the recent momentum, unless something kind of suggests that it should go down. Now, the data that we're not getting from the federal government is a snapshot or gives an indication of how the economy overall is doing. But there is other drivers in the market. In particular, AI continues to be has been a strong driver of the market performance overall. Every week there seems to be a different catalyst, whether, a few weeks ago, Oracle reporting numbers that were far and, higher than expectations, in part because of the, their investment in cloud-related AI spend. Last week, semis had a strong week. They were up. The SOX semiconductor index was up over 4%. But also South Korea semiconductors, whether it's Samsung and others, were up significantly, not just last week, but over the past month, like upwards of 30, 40, 50%. So that was another kind of positive, kind of catalyst driving the markets higher last week, just that theme continues to have momentum. A third factor is investor flows and positioning. continue to have, you know, strong retail participation in this market. They're definitely kind of buying funds into flows into ETFs continue to be kind of, you know, strong. So there's a technical aspect to this overall, you know, kind of performance as investors continue to put, you know, capital work. And if we look at what did well last week, it was the more speculative parts of the market. So small caps outperformed large caps, like the Russell 2000 was higher than the S&P 500. Baskets of stocks, when, you know, different firms will, you know, kind of put these together, these baskets of, say, you know, high risk stocks or, you know, higher default risk stocks, and they were all kind of outperforming last week. Non-profitable tech, kind of a proxy for, you know, kind of more speculative parts of the market, also kind of bouncing a lot. So again, speaking to investors, just willingness to, you know, take some risk last week as well, despite the absence of kind of some of the government issued data. Bond yields did decline a little bit, you know, which is why bond returns are positive. All SQL lower yields tends to boost kind of risk assets. So there was that sort of just mechanical aspect to it, you know, overall. And then a further catalyst that this is more overnight. It didn't matter for last week so much, but there was a new Japanese government, and their bias is to have more kind of fiscal expansion, more dovish, you know, central bank or Bank of Japan. And as a result, you can see like Japanese equities up 5%. So there are sort of global stories. It's not just a U.S. story that are also being kind of tailwinds for risk assets overall.
Okay, so a variety of factors supporting this market momentum at the moment. So based on these considerations, Jason, what are your main investment recommendations at this time? How should investors be positioning?
Well, I mentioned the growth narrative, the macro narrative has not really changed. And again, this is a relatively short bit of time. So there's nothing that would sort of alter our overall kind of messaging. You know, on equities, bottom line, we think this is a bull market, and they'll grind higher. You know, over the course of next year, there will be sometimes pockets of vulnerability, but I kind of focus on some of the key themes. I already alluded to how last week AI, sort of tech, you know, work kind of, you know, that theme kind of played out with semis last week, and today, you know, open AI is having sort of a developer day. Yep. So there could be another kind of news flow that comes out of that, could be again sort of, you know, positive, you know, catalysts. So that continues to be kind of a favored way to you know, position in these markets. Banks and financials are something we like, banks in particular, you know, with a macro environment that, you know, looks relatively constructive, certainly going into next year, Fed cutting rates, yield curve steepening. But a key catalyst for us was the deregulation trend that towards allowing banks to unlock capital, deploy capital, increase earnings per share, things of that sort, more buybacks or you know, kind of returning cash to shareholders. As part of that could also be more deal flow, like kind of looser or more approval of M&A activity to have sort of consolidation. And we saw that actually this morning, this is Monday morning, that First Third announced an acquisition of Comerica for $10.9 billion. This could be a sign of a kind of logjam of deals that have been sort of on hold, starting to kind of break. And this is kind of consistent with a more conducive regulatory environment for banks, certainly, but, you know, in general. But that's another thing that we like. And this is kind of a proof point of that kind of thesis overall. So that's kind of what we like in equities and fixed income. You know, a message we had for a while is kind of, you know, stay high quality. I think that was sort of validated by some of the news last week where First Brands, which is an auto parts supplier, filed for bankruptcy. It had roughly $5 billion of kind of lending to it. It's private credit, but it was more kind of like supply chain and sort of, you know, kind of, you know, inventory like financing. You can kind of parse the details, but the bigger picture is that your spreads are incredibly tight. IG spreads are tight. High yield spreads are tight. But there are risks out there. That their, you know, default rate is still running at 4%. We don't necessarily think it's going to tick up. There are idiosyncratic factors to this one particular, you know, default, but it's a reminder. There is credit risk, and you're not getting paid a lot for taking credit risks at this point in time, which is why, again, we say kind of go up in quality overall. Something else we've continued to like is gold as a diversifier, sort of as a kind of a good way to play sort of a de-dollarization trend, the idea that investors we'll look at what the, you know, the fiscal situation in the U.S., questions, you know, about the Fed's policy going forward, you know, political calculations, and think, well, I want to own less U.S. assets. What else do I buy? Gold is a key beneficiary. It's also a beneficiary from just in general this push towards kind of fiscal expansion, looser monetary policy. And what we saw, again, is gold is up this morning, you know, over 1% on primarily the news of Japan.
No concerns on the price point of gold?
No. I mean, we've upgraded our price targets. So we continue to see this tailwind of, as you see more governments looking to, you know, deal fiscal expansion, easier monetary policy, large deficits that aren't going to be necessarily addressed in the near term, then gold is a good diversifier against that. And we saw that again this morning, I think, on the Japan news, because the new prime minister is expected to pursue something that is more of a reflationary, you know, demand-driven sort of inflation. If that happens, again, that's gold is a beneficiary, and the market response at this point is consistent with that. That's one of the reasons why we like it as a diversifier.
Well, Jason, helpful touch base as always. Thank you for dropping by to begin the trading week with our listeners, our clients. We'll see what happens in DC this week. And as always, do look forward to our next conversation.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. You as well. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.